So again, my story is here to try and pave the way for others to think about some of the things that they can do in their own life to help put one foot in front of the other to build that momentum and build that portfolio and experience.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show, The Naked Truth About Real Estate Investing. And today we got Reid Goossens on the show. He's from Australia. He's an Aussie. He moved here chasing a girl. He got married and then he ended up staying here just like most Australians do. No, I'm just kidding. And he started investing back in 2010-ish, I think. We're going to chat about that in a little bit. Had some single family and then he started scaling into multifamily. Now he has over $500 million in under management, like 3,000 plus units. He lives in LA. He's got a podcast. Check him out on his Instagram. He just got a property, I believe, under contract in right in my backyard here in South Carolina, not too far from where I live. But anyways, I'll let Reid introduce himself. Welcome to the show.
Well, Javier, awesome to be here, mate. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Hello, listeners. Yeah, my name is Reid Goossens. I don't come from this country. My whole shtick is that I moved here about 10 years ago to chase a girl. She was my girlfriend at the time. Now she's my wife, and we have our first baby expecting in the next couple of months. So it's going to be a big life-changing moment. But yeah, my whole story is around, you know, coming to America. I didn't have a job when I moved here. I didn't have much money. I didn't have any network. And I, over the period of time, the last 10 years, I've built up a portfolio of multifamily real estate. About 3,500 units under management today, about over $500 million of assets under management in my company, RSM Property Group. I also have a podcast called Investing in the US. I've written two books. And yeah, I'm here to really share my story and to inspire others to get off the couch and go take action. Because if, you know, a guy from halfway across the globe can come here, again, limited cash, no resources, I didn't know anyone when I moved here and built what I built from scratch, then so can the average American.
Awesome. So you chased a girl across the world, right? So mm-hmm. That's pretty good. And you ended up marrying her. That's great.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's awesome. And there's been war started over relationships, man. So you know what? You know, getting married, hey, that's good. That's definitely good.
That's exactly right. Yep.
So very interesting because, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are here in the US, right? They're born here, they're raised here, and there's so much opportunity. And I run into a lot of folks that come from other parts of the world that, you know, have made something here in the US. Just by not being a lazy bloke, right? You know, don't be a lazy guy, right? Don't be a lazy gal. Don't, you know, you actually get mm-hmm. put some energy and effort into it. So kind of tell me that you got here, you came with nothing. And then what was your like turning point saying, hey, look, I want the American dream or just kind of tell me how you kind of came across multifamily or did you do other business or just mm-hmm. kind of tell me.
Yeah. So the background, my background's in structural engineering. I went to school for graduated in 2007 from university. I went to London straight after that to work on the 2012 Olympic Games, all the infrastructure project, but, you know, obviously many years prior to that. So spent a year in London, then went and worked on the super yachts in the south of France. Have you ever seen the show Below Deck on Bravo? It's exactly the same thing. Worked for a Russian billionaire. And that's where I met Erica, right? So that's where I met my wife and we were just, you know, gallivanting around the south of France. And then when I moved back to Australia in 2010, I really was like, how do I get people to pay me to live my life? Like I was an engineer stuck in a cubicle, you know, really felt that I had more to give in life, you know, sort of like that star athlete sitting on the sidelines of a basketball court, watching the game go in front of me. So had this sort of a curiosity, let's say. And it's when I picked up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad in probably 2010 that I started to really say, hey, this is what I want to do. You know, I want to become an entrepreneur. And I didn't know what the word entrepreneurship meant. I just knew that I was like, I want to somehow people can pay me money to go surfing and travel the globe. That's what I wanted.
Awesome.
And so that really sparked the curiosity. Now, Rich Dad Poor Dad talks a lot about the quadrants and going from business ownership to investor. And I said to myself, well, look, hey, I'm an engineer. I build stuff. Like, if I don't love it, I don't love this job. I feel like a small cog in a big machine, but maybe I can take skills from it. Or, you know, I'm already building infrastructure. I'm already building projects. Like, I've got a skill set here that I can, you know, develop and grow and maybe could be beneficial and help me as a stepping stone into the real estate world. So fast forward to moving to the US, I just wanted to live here as an expat. I wanted to live in New York City. I had no real intention to stay here long-term. I really was just to come here, get a job, maybe move back. And when I first moved to the US, I, within being two weeks fresh off the boat, I was at my first networking event in New York City. It was networking on steroids for real estate investing. And I was just blown away with just the amount of information and the networking opportunities that were available. And within the first 6 months of moving to the US, I think I bought my first property, all cash, for $35,000 in upstate New York. Now, I will say to you, Javier, you couldn't buy a triplex for $38,000 in Australia. It just doesn't exist, right? And so the sheer mass of America and the populations and the different markets and the affordabilities and the cash flows, we just don't have that in Australia. So part of like, you talk earlier about like expats coming and making something of themselves, it's because we have a bit of a tinge of our superpower is understanding what we don't have in our own country. So like taking advantage of something like a $35,000 triplex that cash flows $1,000 a month, like, wow, that's incredible. You know, like I can do that, right? So that was the start of it. And then over the last 8 or 9 years, I've morphed into multifamily. I morphed into syndications. And now we buy large multifamily deals with our investors across key markets that we identify throughout the United States.
Awesome. So when you transfer over, everybody usually starts by buying a house, buying a couple of houses, et cetera. So what made the switch from the houses to the multifamily? Like, were you at an event, you go to a coaching program, or what happened?
So the event, or the nucleus of it all, was I was in New York City. It was end of 2013. I'd amassed three little properties in upstate New York, maybe, I don't know, $170,000 worth of little assets. And I'm sitting there at a bar with my Canadian mate. He just came down for a weekend. He and I had studied at university civil engineering in Australia. And I'm telling him, hey, man, look, I've got these seven units. I'm crushing it. You know, like absolutely, you know, I'm killing it, you know, whatever. And he goes on and tells me, he's like, oh, that's awesome, right? And I had no idea, but he actually himself had bought a 70-unit project in Canada. And I said 70, like 70 units. And he's, and like my mind is exploding, right? I'd heard about this, you know, I'd heard about going bigger and larger, but you know, my mindset was all about, oh, well, I'll do what I can with my own money, right?
Sure.
And he went on to talk about OPM, other people's money. He went on to talk about mentorship. He went on to talk about seller carryback financing. All these topics that I'd been attending these networking events, learning about on a weekend. But here's a guy, a good friend of mine, now setting the bar at a certain level that I'm like, now the bar's set. If Scott can do it in Canada, why can't I do it here in the United States? And so that was really the catalyst to go out and do more and be more. I went out and got a mentor. I started my podcast, Investing in the US. I started talking to people about the journey that I'm on, and then truly trying to create a sense of education in and around what I was doing in order to raise more capital for ultimately my deals and become a bit of a thought leader in my space. So that was the catalyst to get me to where I am today. I will say there's been a long journey between when I picked up that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and when I could actually quit my day job. Because also remember, when I came to the United States, I wasn't married. So I had to have a job in order to have a visa, right? Otherwise, I couldn't stay here. So I actually, by the time I picked up, it was 2009, Rich Dad Poor Dad, I quit my corporate job in 2018. And I'd done four large syndications as a lead syndicator when I quit my job because I finally got my green card. So all these other things, you know, the meeting with Scott in New York City, that's 2013. Then there's the sort of the starting of the journey to go down the path of learning about syndications, building the podcast. There's a long period of time there. And I just sort of, I want to pause there and let your listeners know that it's just not overnight success, right? It takes time and it's stepping through the different levels that you have to graduate through in order to achieve where you want to go. And again, Tony Robbins talks about you can overestimate what you can achieve in a year, but you underestimate what you can achieve in a decade. And I look back at the last decade and I had no intentions of getting into multifamily and syndications and all that sort of stuff. But I kept putting one foot in front of the other. And now I look back at the last 10 years and go, wow, that's freaking awesome. So again, my story is here to try and pave the way for others to think about some of the things that they can do in their own life to help, you know, put one foot in front of the other to build that momentum and build that portfolio and experience.
This is awesome because it's what I tell everybody, you know, quite often, and I've got a lot of folks who are successful like you on the show. And it's strange because sometimes, you know, we're doing a business or we're flipping houses and we got 10 rentals, 20 rentals, and you're like, man, man, man. And then you run into somebody that you actually know or just that's, hey, I just bought a 200-unit apartment. You're like, holy crap. You know, especially if you know them, you're like, Wow. Man, you were in college, you were pissed drunk. you bought 70. Come on, man. Well, I don't know. As your friend, right?
No, 100%. That was 100%.
Like, you're the guy running in his underwear in the middle of the hallway. Like, you bought us. Come on, man. Like, you know, and your belief level just.
It's those moments, Javier, that, you know, they talk about, oh, surround yourself with people. And it's just like, oh my, like, you know, I get goosebumps even today thinking about that interaction, because it is that. It's not until it hits home for you that you realize I can do it as well. If he's done it or someone else has done it, it's really close to me. And I've already known them as a personal friend. Yep. Then you, again, I talk at the bar being set. Well, and I'm one of those guys that you set that bar, I'm going to try and jump it, you know? So.
Oh, for sure. So, you know, just, you know, networking, right? You know, you were networking, you believed, took some action. That's one of the top three things they talk about all the time. Yeah. People ask, Javier, how'd you do it? Number one, I believed, changed my mindset. Number two, I networked, built some relationships. Number three, took action, executed, right? That's basically in the big picture, right?
That's what it is.
That's what it is, for sure.
But the last step is always the hardest step. So many people stop. So many people stop and feel good about going to the seminar and feel good about reading the books and listening to the podcast. And that's all important. It's the taking the action and through. And here's the thing I'll tell you, all your listeners. The action that I took in the beginning, once I heard that story from Scott, the biggest thing I took out of it was mentor. I was doing it on my own. I've been trying to learn on my own for such a long period of time. And when I say such a long period of time, you know, again, I picked up a book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, in 2010. This is 2013. So there's, you know, a good 4 or 5 years there of just, you know, attending seminars and, you know, reading and doing it myself and all that sort of stuff. But I was starting to see the ceiling form that I needed more. And that's where the coach comes in or the mentor comes in. And everyone thinks, oh, you know, I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to pay for it, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing about paying for it. It's not the fact that you're parting ways with your money, it's the fact that you're betting on yourself. You're taking whatever it costs, you know, it might cost you $1,000, $5,000, $20,000, $50,000. I don't know. You choose a mentor that obviously you align with. But the act of paying for that is an investment in yourself, because you're taking a bet on yourself. And that's where I stepped up. That was like, I'm worthy of spending this money to take my life to the next level. And so many people don't look at it like that. Yep. So many people look at it like, oh, I don't want to pay for this mentor. I don't want to pay for this thing. Now, that mentor back then is different to the mentor and coach I have today, but it's always someone's in my court supporting me as I go down this path of entrepreneurship. Because ultimately, Javier, as you know, it's bloody lonely, right? You need that coach. You need that person who's in your court that's championing you to keep going forward.
Oh, for sure. I think... you know, you can scale a lot quicker. You can avoid mistakes. Doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes, but you can avoid some mistakes. And, you know, I tell people all the time, right? Get a mentor. Even if you got to pay for it, you're either going to pay the street or you're going to pay a mentor. I'd rather pay a mentor and get around a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And just my belief level increases. Everything increases, your connections, your relationships, and you're able to take your business to the next level as long as you execute, right? You take action and you execute, because you have to. It's not a good, you know, good feeling, right? You go to this motivation event, Tony Robbins event, but once you go, you feel pumped up. But if you leave, you don't do anything, then okay, you know, it was just like, it was a nice weekend.
Right.
I'm sure you had a great weekend, but you got to make sure you definitely take some action. Yeah, I love your story, man. It's awesome. Coming from Australia, you know, jumping into real estate, you're going to be here for a short period of time. You just never go back, right? And then you built yourself something wonderful, you know, here in America that you can, you know, because you notice certain things from your country that you can't do here. Like, I don't know what lending is like in Australia, right? I don't
That's
know
right.
what the LTV, I don't know, like leverage, I don't know any of that, mm-hmm, right? So people come from like Mexico and they come here like, holy crap, you can get a refinance, you can do it. I mean, they're like, you can get these kind of loans. They're like, it's crazy the way you can work the financial system here in the US.
Right.
So I think definitely you have a definitely advantage on that.
100%. No, I think in terms of the leverage, it's a good point of, when people ask me all the time, like, well, how do you compare Australia to America? I was like, well, there's 300 million people here. You know, I think there's 300 million people. It's rough about that. We have 25 million people in Australia. The same land mass, you know, so mainland America, mainland Australia, roughly, give or take, is roughly the same land mass. But we can only inhabit about 20% of our land, because the rest of it's just desert. So when you have less people, you have, and I'm going to use the word sophistication, but it's not a derogatory thing. We just don't have as much sophistication in terms of lending vehicles, right? You have 300 million people here. You have Freddie, Fannie. You have all these non-recourse, you know, institutional Fed-backed loans that just stems more options for lending, right? In Australia, we don't have multifamily in Australia because in Australia, a couple of things exist. Cost of construction is really high. Cost of land is really high. And then the lack of financing is the last one. So if I come to a bank in Australia and I say, hey, I want to build 100 units. They're like, great. Go pre-sell 30% of them before we give you the construction loan. So it's already, you have to do condominiums. It's all a build to build the sale. It's, you know, it's not a build for rent because the cost of doing that only pencils for the sale, right? So we just don't have, I couldn't go and buy 250 garden style apartment units in Australia. It just don't exist. And that's because of labor, that's because of land costs, and that's because of the lending environment. Now, that doesn't mean you still can't make money. It's just different and just different ways of understanding that.
Well, that's why multifamily doesn't exist in a lot of countries. I'll take Mexico, for example, right? Because the landlord-tenant laws, you know, are super complicated. You know, they can never leave, right? That's one thing, right? That's why you don't see a 200-unit apartment building being leased out just because, you know, the government as well, right? And the laws. So, yeah, very interesting. So tell me a little bit about kind of what your role is right now in your company. Like, what's your superpower? What's your role? What do you focus on?
Yeah, well, so I'm the CEO, I'm the founder. I make sure what I focus on is company culture and putting the right butts in the right seats. That's my role, right? And obviously equity is the big one, right? But leading from the front, making sure the right people are in positions that we can operate at a good level, at a sophisticated level. Now, I will say that I've done every single position in my company because as a sole entrepreneur, when I started 7, 8, 9 years ago, you do everything, right? You understand the systems and the processes. I remember talking to someone on my show, Brandon Turner, actually from Bigger Pockets, and he talks about the sort of the four levels, which are really interesting. There's a DIY, right? You get your first house, your house hack it, you change the toilet, you know, you're changing the front door yourself. Then there goes on to project manager. You might get, you know, a couple of handymen that you're having to oversee. The next level is then COOs, chief operating officer. And that's where you might hire a GC, but you're still overseeing the day-to-day systems. But then the fourth level is architect. And you need to move as you move in your business. I need to keep elevating myself. Now, I started DIY, but over the years, if you look back, I'm now at the architecture level and I've got people below me because I can now afford that are making the business run at a better clip. You know, I might have started on a little tricycle. I'm just pedaling by myself. Now I've upgraded to a mountain bike. Now I'm driving in a car. Now I want to get into an airplane, right? And I want to go at a faster pace. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. So tell me, what does your team look like right now?
So CFO, part-time fractional CFO. I have a COO who's kind of a pseudo business partner as well. He owns equity in the company. I have asset management, I have construction management, and then we do our third-party property management, and then I have analysts, but those analysts are overseas. So pretty lean team for how much units we have under management, but that's because we also partner with property managers in our local cities, and we also do general contracting. We outsource, or not outsource, but we partner with local GCs. We do the construction management, the asset management, and obviously all the underwriting, and we sort of focus on what we're good at and can stick to our lane.
That is awesome. Cool. So tell me one of your latest projects.
Just closed on a 135 unit deal in Phoenix, Arizona.
Awesome.
I closed last week. I just got back from Phoenix yesterday. And then we have another 280 units in Greenville, South Carolina that we've just gone under contract. I'm actually going to wire the earnest money deposit today. And we're out banging the can about raising capital.
Awesome. So when are you you're going to fly into Raleigh then to walk this property?
I'm coming in next Monday. I'm flying in through Dallas to Greenville. And then on the way home, I'm going Charlotte to LA. So,
Oh, you're going to Greenville, South Carolina, not North
Carolina.
I'm going to say Greenville is like an hour and 30 minutes from my house.
You're
flying to Raleigh.
You're going to
Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah, you're flying to Charlotte.
Yeah, South Carolina. And for those people who are listening, everyone in Greenville, South Carolina says it's the better Greenville. So, no dog in this fight.
Yeah, it's a great city. Charlotte, that little area there, it's a great market, by the way. It's a great market for sure. Cool. So now what is your main role? You said you're kind of the architect, but once you tackle a project down, what's your role right now? Is it just raising equity, signing a loan? Yep. What do you focus on doing? The due diligence?
All of it and more. So, you know, part of what I'm, as my evolution in 2022 is to hire good people. I do oversee every single bucket that we've got to do. So it's the equity raising, it's the bank, it's the due diligence, it's making sure we're having all our presentations and our emails going out at the right time. The marketing is right on point. but I'm the puppeteer. I'm not necessarily the puppet doing that work anymore, but making sure that I'm quality controlling it before it heads out the door, because it's obviously the face of our company. It's everything is branded correctly, making sure that it's really, really professional. But I'm also really focused on the acquisition side and the underwriting, and then making sure we're executing. So putting in the right expectations with our partners on the ground, our property management team, understanding what are we going to do in terms of our supply chain for renovations. How is that going to affect us? Because we're buying 280 units, we buy in bulk from Asia. So we buy granites, cabinets, flooring, you know, all in bulk and bring it in containers. We got to understand what that timing is like. When can we get under contract? So when we can get a GC under contract to then start on those interiors. And it might take a bit of a delay between when we close and when we get, you know, going with the value add because of, you know, shipping problems. All those things melt into a pot and I sort of oversee that. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, if you need some recommendations on a GC around that area, let me know. We have one working on a 103 unit we bought in Charlotte.
Perfect.
So they're working on that, and you know, you can shoot me a message if you want a referral if you need something.
Yes, please. Yeah. Yes, please. All referrals, much appreciated.
What else? Instagram. Reed Goosen and Instagram. I just followed you, so I'm your next follower. I just click follow, so we can
awesome stuff.
Yep. Yeah, let's see what you have in there for your social media. It's I like it. You got new deals, bestsellers, books. You got some information on a close every go portfolio, mess up portfolio, 135 units. Pretty neat. So awesome. You guys check out the social media as well.
Please check it out.
Reed, so I got one last question before we go to the favorite part of the show. Mm-hmm. This is a naked truth about real estate investing. So tell me what was the biggest mistake you made, right? And maybe possibly how could you have avoided it? And let's talk about syndication. Maybe when you jumped into the apartment multifamily syndication.
Yeah. Look, there's been small. I don't think that obviously I'm still here today. I'm still kicking and breathing. The company's still alive. Yep. So it hasn't been a mistake that's been catastrophic, right? I'm still in business. Sure. So there's been small mistakes along the way. I think the biggest thing I talk about is you make money when you buy, but you lose it through bad management. And it's not bad property management. It's a combination of property management, construction management, and asset management. It's all three of those things. If you're a syndicator and you think you're going to go out and buy a deal, give it to the property manager and see you later, I'm going to go on to the next one, that you're incorrect. Those property, if you're doing third-party property management, you're doing third-party general contracting, it is your role and responsibility as the asset manager, as the, you know, the lead sponsor, to be on every call and making sure you are pushing that stone towards the finish line, because it is taking these big deals down. It's like turning a big ship. It's like turning the Titanic on a dime to push it in another direction. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of management and people power. So you make money when you buy, but you lose it really quickly through bad asset management, bad property management, and bad construction management.
Oh, yeah, very interesting. That's very true. Very true. And I had somebody on the podcast a few months ago. They have about $1.8 billion under management. And they had like $500 million under contract. And they did their own property management, right? Mm-hmm. They had vertically integrated. And he was telling me, I'm like, man, that just seems like a lot of work. He's like, but you know what? He told me multifamily, like syndications, is probably one of the only businesses out there that outsources his operations, right? The main operations, which is property management, they outsource that to a third party. That's why they decided to do it on their own, but they have a pretty large portfolio. And people ask me all the time, will you do it? Will you not do it? You know, I can't say I'll never do it. I've talked to people that said, hey, we love it, we enjoy it. And I talked to people that said, man, it's been the worst 3 years of my life, mm-hmm. right? Well, what do you fall under that? Like as far as self-management, vertical integrated?
On my podcast, I've interviewed Keith Wasserman from Gelt. He's based here in Los Angeles. He's got over $3 billion of assets under management. 2 years ago when I interviewed him, at the time, he was well over $1.5 billion. It's probably similar to your gentleman that you interviewed. He still did not bring property management in-house. And the reason he said this, and I kind of believe this, is if you're starting your own property management company, the number one, that key person in the bum in the seat of the community manager, you need to attract good talent. So if I'm going to Charlotte or to Raleigh and I have deals in Texas and I'm starting, I don't know, Reed Goosen's property management, how am I as a company, my culture, my pool, how am I going to attract the best talent in that market if I've not been in that market ever? So for me, it's about partnering up with those local operators, those local property management companies who've been around the hoop for a long time. Partner with them for the first couple of years. And then once you sort of start to get momentum in a market, then you might be able to flip it over in terms of, so the flicking the switch is easier because you have that experience. You've got 10, 12, 15 assets in a market. That makes it a lot easier because you've built out your bench. But if you're going to a new market, you're starting fresh, I think it can be a little challenging. And I've talked to a lot of operators who think they're going to save money, who think they're going to, you know, jam the NOI, who think they're going to go quicker. And ultimately, it doesn't actually come out to be true in the end because they are vertically integrated.
Great point. I had somebody say, well, you're paying 3%, 5%, whatever the number is on asking, that's a lot of money. And I'm like, well, just get a better deal. That's what I say. Right? If 3% is going to break your deal, then you got a bad deal.
I love that.
Go find a better deal. That's what I tell them. They're like, yeah, there's no answer to that. Yes, get a better price, man. Let's go. Right? I don't want to pay a construction fee. I'm like, go get a better price unless you have somebody on your team that can do,
it.
Construction management. If you don't, then get a better deal and pay somebody to do it. Right?
Correct.
So awesome. Cool. So before we jump over to the favorite part of the show, anything else, Reid, you'd like to add?
No, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been an awesome time. So yeah, let's jump into the favorite part of the show.
Yeah, let's see. Let me know when you can see my screen here.
There we go.
All right. So this is called the Naked Truth Roulette. Okay. I'm going to ask you three random questions. It's got nothing to do with real estate. And we're going to see, let's see how you answer. First person from Australia. Mm-hmm. It's on my show. So let's see what kind of answers we get. Three random questions. Ready?
Let's do it.
All right, let's roll. All right, first question for Reid here on the Naked Truth Roulette is, let's see, number one. All right, what is the craziest thing you ever sneaked into a movie theater?
I don't go to the movies that much, but sneaking your own alcohol in is probably the first one, right?
There you go. I've heard people bring in like liquor bottles, wine bottles, and like all kinds of stuff, you know? Like, all right, cool, that's awesome. I've never snuck alcohol into a movie theater.
Don't
worry. No, like I'm 43 and I started drinking when I was like 36, 37. Right. So I started a little bit late. Uh-huh. So anyways, all right, let's go. Question number two. Oh man. Back to the movie theater. Have you ever cried at a movie?
No, but the movie that was kind of sad that I remember was The Green Mile. It was a very emotional movie.
Great movie. Yeah. All right. You have not. So you're having a little one soon. Is boy or a girl?
Girl.
Like girl. So I have four boys and I have one girl. Every time I see a movie where the girl's getting married, everybody looks at me. They stare at me. They got my watery eyes, you know? And, you know, the boys are like, "Dad, but I'm going to get married too." I'm like, yeah, it's just different, guys. It's just different, you know? But yeah, every time there's something about getting married and a die, I start crying. So anyway, so I'm going to ask you in a few years, okay?
Got it. Okay.
Cried at a movie. You'd be like, yeah, I cry at everything. Crying at everything. All right. Awesome. Here we go. Last question for Reid. Let's roll. Let's see what we got. Favorite quote. What is your favorite quote?
Favorite quote. I've got to give this to my dad. I don't know if he stole it from someone, but it's definitely pretty relevant to the session we're talking today. And the quote is, and I always remember him saying this, so don't be a fool when it comes to your money, your financial future. He was just a high school teacher, not just a high school teacher. He was an awesome high school teacher. But with the money, the blue collar job that he had, he was able to put his money into small amounts of real estate over time and was able to grow that. And he wasn't a fool. So don't be a fool when it comes to your financial education. Go out, educate yourself. I'm self-educated. I'm sure Javier, you're self-educated as well about what you do in regards to business. And it goes back to getting off the couch and taking action.
Awesome. Stop being a lazy bloke. For sure. All right. Reid, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. Very nice to connect with you. And if you're ever back in North Carolina buying something else in that backyard, just, you know, I'll find out because I'm part of your newsletter now. So I'll be getting your updates and your newsletter. So I'll know for sure. And I'm going to reach out so we can maybe get together and grab some food or something. So thank you so much, Reid, for being on the show. I'm Javier, your host, and don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback, not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel or you can put it on monday.com. monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks. for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's a really cool Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.